317 is always great, but 318 is always like the worst day of the year for me. God, absolutely. I hate that day.
No, you are not wrong. It's like one of the things people always ask me, like, oh, you're taking your birthday off work? No. Why not? It's your birthday. Yeah, I'm taking the next day off.
Yeah, it's the next day.
I know what I'm about.
Like the day of, I can get plenty of work done, but the next day, yeah, I ain't getting any work done.
No, absolutely not. No, as you saw, and as I'll post into some of the social media and some of the stuff as we go.
Bob and Liz and
I Dave. I saw Bob, Liz, and Dave. It was a great time.
Yeah. Some great friends of Drunkenomics and of us.
Absolutely. It was good to see everybody again. It was fun.
Did you eat any Lucky Charms?
I did not.
Oh.
No.
Did you know that over $5 trillion exchanges hands on a daily basis? That's an average of over $220 billion an hour. Now, how does this much money move every single day, and why does it move the way it does? Here on Drunkenomics, two bartenders who also happen to be students at the University of Nebraska Graduate School of Business are going to sit down and drink to the global economy and try and translate it into English. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a stiff one, and have a drink with us to the comedy that is the global economy.
And welcome back to yet another episode, yet another presentation of Drunkenomics. This is the drinking podcast with an economics problem. So glad you can join us. Hopefully you do have a nice stiff one in front of you, unless of course you're about to drive somewhere. Then in that case, I would just wait till you get to where you're going and drink responsibly. But with that said, so glad to be here. So glad to be having a stiff one with all of you. My name, of course, as the...
It's 2551.
Less gracious host. Yes, yeah. Okay, fine. So less gracious host still, and still up to date and everything in the Discord, yeah. The LGH, Aaron Wong. And of course, on the other side of this camera, I'm joined alongside the more gracious host. How do you pronounce your name again?
James Goldwater, Graceful Grace... Ed.
Grace.
Grace.
Inc. Graced.
No,
Graced.
I don't know.
Whatever.
That's good. We're getting to a point where they're going to start calling me Grace Kelly soon because...
hey,
terrible, you know, joke.
She worked with possibly the greatest director of all time quite a bit, so...
Yeah, that's fair.
I suppose, you know, you could be called worse things than Grace Kelly, so...
Absolutely.
Yeah, but seriously, so glad you all can join us. With that, I'll say if you want to join us even more throughout the week... You can always find us at Drunkenomical, that's DRUNKENOMICAL, on the Metaverse, that's Instagram, Facebook, and of course, separately and not affiliated with the other two, is our Twitter page, Drunkenomical, same handle, DRUNKENOMICAL. We also have a LinkedIn, and Discord, yeah, from those places you can find our... the link to our Discord, which is...
It's a permanent link, yeah. But, super fun community. You just check us out. I guess Metaverse died last week, too. That went very quietly. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. I've been reading some articles that said
that's how it goes.
The Zuck has decided to put the Metaverse to bed.
Good.
I'm still going to call it the Metaverse because, frankly, you don't deserve to get to hide that. It's just, no.
No, it was a really bad investment decision.
It was
a bad idea.
I
got to be honest with you. I'll have to admire him for trying to be ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, dude, come on. Like,
well, exactly right. For me, it's one of these very simple things. It's there's that great line in Wolf of Wall Street. I don't ask my investors to judge my winners, my losers, because I have so few. Mark, we're judging you on your loser. And boy, it was a bad one. Elon, we're judging you too. How's Twitter going?
So the Metaverse was a small loser, like, and not a small loser. It was a, you know, small in terms of like the amount of losers that Mark Zuckerberg has had. You know, he hasn't had many, but that one loser was massive in terms of dollar amount. I mean, that was a cash furnace.
Look, I'll be honest. They caught up with Google Glass. Let's put it that way. In this,
yeah, I mean, maybe, like, I mean, really? Who knows? Come maybe on, guys. Later on. He'll find the right engineer and he'll, you know, I don't know, restart the machine.
Maybe it'll work out in 20 years. Who knows? But not today. Not today.
Exactly. So, you know, let's drink one. Let's pour one out to the Metaverse. Yay.
Pour one out to Zuck.
to Zuck. Yeah. But seriously, you know, love hearing from you guys on Discord. You know, it's free to all. Feel free to join if you have any questions for us.
Yeah, we had some great questions last week. We really did. We had some great questions. We had some great conversations just about the banking in general, the SVB, the Credit Suisse issues, all of it. And I'll be honest, as of recording, because we're recording a little early even for us this week, I'm gonna say it, but Tim. Really? You're going to call me out on that? You're going to call me out on Bitcoin? All right. I see you. Not John Cena to me. No, I'm kidding. You're right, Tim. There are people who actually buy things with Bitcoin. That's not the surprising part. What surprises me is that there are people selling things for Bitcoin.
Okay, hold on. I didn't actually see what he sent in there because he literally sent it in like a second ago.
It's in Venezuela. So it's that in Venezuela that people are using cryptocurrency as, they paid directly with Bitcoin. They bought some things. Well, and I'm going to say this. I get it.
I just don't know how logistically that would work because it's like, okay, is there something in the grocery store that consistently tracks what the value of Bitcoin is? And then And then what kind of volatility do you also price in? Because you have to, like,
you
if you're receiving
so,
Bitcoin,
yeah.
you have
but
to.
But at the same time, to, if you look at, but if you, I, and I haven't done this because I haven't, I only just read the article. It came in as we started recording, Tim. So,
literally.
I'll say this is if I was a Venezuelan shop owner and I legitimately looked at things and I saw the volatility of cryptocurrency, which is exceptionally volatile, was less volatile or more easily accepted than my local Venezuelan currency, I would absolutely jump ship.
Yeah. And there's that aspect too, right? The Venezuelan currency doesn't necessarily look that enticing. I don't have personally a big appetite for it. I don't even know if Venezuelans even have a
no. They like dollars, and it's very strange.
Yeah. So crazy. I mean, and they're sitting on a ton of nat resources too, man.
It's amazing what happens when. Like, on the one hand, we sat here and praised German regulators for seizing control and nationalizing Russian interests in Germany. But I'll sit here at the same time and in the same breath say, I mean, this is what happens when you nationalize other interests in your country, when you nationalize oil and natural gas interests in your country, right? And I have almost no shame saying it, but I realize that it is it doesn't sound great. It looks bad.
I agree. Like this, the thing is nationalized. I don't want, oil and gas to be nationalized.
No. What it boils down to, I guess, is that in Germany, there is still no expectation that any private investment or private property you have in Germany will be taken by the state, taken away from you by the state. In Venezuela, that is not so true.
Which is really scary. I mean, we always talk about how private property rights are the
cornerstones of economic growth and economic investment.
Sustainable economy. So, yeah, but speaking of which, I guess, picking up from where we left off last week, because I feel like, actually explain exactly what happened with SVB? Because if not, do you want to take like 5 minutes real quick to just go through what happened?
I guess.
One drink to SVB.
I got to pour one out. Let me grab one really fast, just a quick shot.
Me too.
You know what? It's appropriate, I think, that I have some Godiva. To SVD and Credit Suisse.
All right, cool. I love it. All right, so
I'm gonna have a little bit of chocolate.
All right, yeah, there you go. It's only fair, right? It's only fair.
Absolutely.
I think let's start from the top, right? So SVB, as we all know, is a much younger bank in the United States. When I say much younger, I think the inception was around in the 80s. But if you think about it, there's 70s or 80s, right? Which if you think about it, most banks like JP Morgan, like Goldman Sachs, like Bank of America have been around for centuries.
Been around for at least 100 years, right? So there's a longevity that it does not have. It's targeted. Yes. So it's also targeted a very specific market. It targeted the Silicon Valley startup industry. So that's a lot of tech.
Exactly.
It's a lot of, if you really want to think about it, it's firms that are taking a lot of venture capital and angel investment money, and they're operating at losses. So there's not a huge amount of necessarily money coming in after the initial deposit.
Well, so normally speaking, like this bank caters to, let's say a startup company. James and I started up a new Drunkenomics LLC, and all of a sudden we get $15 million from an angel investor. What do we do with $15 million? We're not going to spend it all right now to fund our operation. We're going to have to put a little bit of that away.
After we have the Drunkenomics Ferraris and the MV Drinkonomist, I don't know, that's our boat.
then we take the rest of that, the $14 million left over, and then we put it into a bank account at SVB. Why? Because they catered towards
made us a great offer. They came to us and they said,
deposit we're not gonna, money here. We'll,
as long as you keep a minimum balance in your minimum rolling balance to your account every day of $6 million, we will
give you a 5% savings rate.
We'll give you this 5% savings rate. We'll give you you know, we won't bill you for this, this, and this. We'll do your payroll. We'll do payroll aspects for you for free.
Yeah.
A lot of different things that we'd be nickel and diming out other places for. We'd be paying money to do these things, but we're getting them free plus a little interest rate on it. And we say, actually, this is much better than getting 3% at Chase Manhattan, but then having to pay to do all this, all these payroll things. So
yeah, exactly.
We accept the deal.
Yeah. So they start, and they did well. Like, I mean, SVB was a good bank. I mean, they
survived Theranos. So
they survived that. They survived, think about all the things they went through, right? They survived the dot-com bubble. They survived the mortgage crisis, right? The GFC. So like, think about like how sustainable this business has been. This has been a really, really good business.
Yeah, they've been around.
But the thing is, the big problem with them, unlike
Wells Fargo or someone.
Yeah, the Cities, Chases, Wells Fargo's, all that kind of stuff. The average, I forget the average size, I think, of their normal of one account was about, I think, just shy of $15 million.
That's where we came up with the $15 million number. That's the average size. So what happened is, SVB was the 16th largest bank in the U.S. at the time with assets.
Yeah, it's massive
in terms
bank,
of assets.
Yeah. The AUMs,
It had very few, relatively speaking, deposit accounts for very large amounts, $15 million being the average one, versus like a Chase Manhattan or a JP Morgan, which has a substantially larger customer deposit base, but the average account is much, much smaller.
Yeah. So like, I forget what it was too. I saw another number. So SVB, I think it was 70% of their accounts had more than 250,000. And then if you go like the average bank, like JP Morgan, Bank of America, whatever, like the average bank account size, or not average, the about 20% of accounts there at all those platforms
exceed that FDIC threshold.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
So 80%, 80% was fine. And then 20%, you know, might've been a little bit over. Whereas SVB, it was like almost every single account was over way over that $250,000 threshold.
So what happens is Wednesday night, you kind of have two things happening. You have Silvergate Bank announcing that it's liquidating. It's just not going to be a bank anymore. I think we talked about that. We did talk about that. I know we talked about that. Banks are the business of making money. So when a bank goes, hey, we're not in business anymore. Oh, that's a sign of the times.
Yes. That provoked something on Wednesday, which was the CEO, right?
The CEO of SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, coming out and saying, hey, there's about a $2.5 billion hole in our balance sheet right now. Don't worry. We're going to sell equity to fill that. Be cool. I think he basically just said, be cool, be chill.
So just a completely unwarranted message that caused massive panic. I mean, like, he really did. Like, it's,
like if he'd come out and said, we have this hole, we're going to sell equity, we have a plan, we have buyers, please remain calm. This will take 24 hours. We'll be good. It's going to be filled.
I don't even think, like, I think it should just been like a letter to.
Even that's not great news.
Don't post something on Twitter. Like, if you have to, send an email to your depositors. If you have to, send an email to your depositors.
Yeah, send an official communication with.
Why go through Twitter? But whatever. I mean, it's all water under the bridge. It's all spilt milk under the bridge, right?
Exactly right.
So and, that happens. But then when you actually take a look at their balance sheet, so they had, and we talked about this last week, the average, their bond portfolio duration was 7.5 years?
Yeah, the average
matured
in 7 years.
Yeah, which normally speaking, there's nothing wrong with it. Like I would have no problem with that for like a Citibank or a JP Morgan, like a 7.5 year duration.
Well, exactly right. But at the same time, remember those guys, 70%, 80% of their accounts are 100% insured at all times, right? So,
exactly.
So they don't have to worry about depositors. They do not really have to worry about depositors running.
Yeah. But then the summary of this could just be poor risk management.
Absolutely.
Right? Like you don't
poor other management. It wasn't just the risk officers.
Absolutely.
It was everybody in there.
Yeah, no, there was definitely a lot of skin in the game for every single department. But like the risk was just really, really poorly managed because what Silicon Valley Bank was trying to do is they're trying to promise these large interest rates for their depositors because they're relatively newer.
I know one other firm that does that, and it got them in trouble too. You guys may have heard of this firm called Evergrande. They did similar things.
I thought you were going to say Debit Suisse, but Evergrande too. Absolutely.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get to Debit Suisse.
Yeah, don't move. We'll get to that one. But yeah, so that essentially happened. Like, you know, when you have if they want to think about what duration is, right? If anybody that studied fixed income in a class or whatever it is, duration is essentially, a lot of people think about it as like, this is the amount of, if you have a duration of 7 years, that means you have to hold this bond for 7 years to realize all the profits from a certain security. But a lot of people like to also look at duration and say, hey, this is how sensitive a bond is or a portfolio of bonds might be to interest rate hikes, right? So
absolutely, or inflation.
Or inflation, yeah.
Because so, remember, the shorter that time period, the less that has an effect to bite you.
Yeah.
The longer that time period,
Yeah, exactly. Like a long duration bond is going to be really, really sensitive to interest rate hikes, you know? So
absolutely.
You know, a long duration bond portfolio also is going to elicit the same characteristics. If you have a bond portfolio duration of 7.5 years and the Fed raises interest rates, you know,
to 4.5%.
Yeah,
in a year.
I don't know if I'm citing a true event or not, but if the Fed raises interest rates, if they raise the Fed funds rate by 500 basis points ish, yeah, that's not going to be good if you have a bond portfolio duration of 7.5 years.
Yeah, not if these were 10-year bonds issued on,
especially,
you know, two and a quarter, 2.4, 2.5 coupons.
Or try 1.87, but like, yeah, you know, like
just trying to give them.
Yeah, I know. That is very nice of you to do something like that, James. Especially as you drink your Godiva liqueur. But
it's really nice. Like I love it in a cocktail.
I bet it is.
But right now, it's obviously I'm trying to get some Swiss on. Let's put it that way.
Nice.
Even though I know Lady Godiva is Italian. So please, I understand.
Ballpark, a little column A. But like, yeah, so essentially that happens. A bond portfolio duration of 7 years, there's nothing wrong with a bond portfolio duration of 7 years. It's just like when you're using this portfolio as something that, if you're securing a bunch of deposits against this portfolio, that's when you start running into issues. If
yeah.
there is a CEO that tweets something like, hey, everybody stay calm, no reason to panic.
Yeah.
You know, that could
it would spook some people. Now, the next one is if you're then the investor, not investors, I'm sorry. I don't care. That's not true. I do care about investors. In this case, that's not who we're specifically speaking worried about. You knew what bank you were investing in. You saw what was happening. You should have known better.
Yeah. It's not the Fed's fault, though. This is not the Fed's fault.
No, absolutely not. In this rising interest rate environment, which remember, is still below inflation. We still have a negative interest rate right now. I don't think it's the interest rate's fault.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the Fed's fault. This is the end result of a prolonged inflationary period, a high inflationary
Absolutely.
Period. And to say, oh, it's the Fed's fault. I'm like, well, the Fed's not, you know, just doing this out of spite. They're reacting to something. But so you have these banks, or in this case, SVB, which is marking down huge unrealized losses, right? Because they have to keep the book value accurate to what the market value is.
Yeah.
And then one day, the day comes where they go, where the people who have 14.75 million dollars uninsured in the bank start moving their money out.
Then now SVB has to start selling their 7.5 year duration bonds.
Exactly.
That
into
all of a sudden,
with low coupons into a high inflation, high interest rate market.
And low liquidity.
They're clearly having liquidity issues. They're having, at this point, it's not, I don't think $2.5 billion is liquidity issues. I think when we start to see these bonds selling off, we're starting to talk about solvency issues. So the difference, guys, is that liquidity issues is, hey, I have enough assets, but they are illiquid, right? So it takes me a minute to convert whatever I have of value to cash to pay you. That's a liquidity issue.
Yes.
Like a liquidity issue would be me saying, okay, I hate to use this example, but I'm gonna. A liquidity issue is a drug dealer with a lot of drugs going, I'll pay you in cocaine. A solvency issue is a drug dealer without drugs going, I promise I'll have your money, man. Just don't shoot me. Right?
I suppose that's a really good analogy, but
I hate to use it, but like,
it's actually really fitting.
It is.
I mean, listen, man, I don't think you're far off when you're comparing the way SVB's risk management department has been running their business to a drug dealer. I don't think that's too outlandish.
I love that. What is that one line in The Big Short? Is that in the pub in England or in the UK? Which like, are you a banker or a drug dealer? Because if you're a banker, you can fuck right off.
Yeah, it's like the Black Horse pub or whatever that is.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Horse, I'm in a pub.
$18 million. Yeah.
Entertainingly, he calls Credit Suisse in that one.
Oh, yeah. That's really, yeah. So speaking of which, so that's essentially what happened with SVB, right?
Is
there was a run to the hills. They needed to cover their deposits with these bonds that had a long
which
duration.
Which weren't going
to
be able
really
to. Let's put it that way.
Which, so they needed to start selling these bonds as fast as they could. They couldn't give these bonds away as fast as they wanted to. I mean, these like, and there were, these bonds do have value, right? They have Absolutely. Some value.
Especially at 7 years when they become $1,000 a piece.
Yeah.
And between now and then, a little bit of cash to keep it sweet.
Yeah, if you think about it, like a bond that gives you, a security, let's just say, a security that gives you $1,000 in 7 years, there's value, right? Like if I said, James, if you gave me $700 and I'll give you $1,000 in 7 years, like, you know, you might be like, oh, $650, right? Like,
yeah. So there's value, right? I'll grab a finance calculator and I'll do some math really fast and I'll say, okay, all right.
4% interest rates.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, so there's definitely value in a security that gives you $1,000 at some point. But like when you had to sell $40 billion or however many they'd had to.
Yeah, like overnight.
Yeah, now the buyers are asking for a bargain because they know you're desperate. Like they know you have to take these off your books.
Exactly. I'm never going to pay you more than it's worth. And I'm also not going to pay you what it's worth because how am I going to make money if that happens, right? Yeah. I'm looking for an arbitrage opportunity.
Yeah, so that's why... Goldman came in.
So Goldman was the buyer. Goldman was the counterparty for all these bonds.
There were a bunch of buyers coming in. Goldman was kind of the one. They're
Goldman
the bank
was
that's
the
responsible
main buyer,
for their debt.
If not the only buyer. I know that Goldman.
There was a contract.
So they were under contract. They bought it. And my guess
is they came in too.
They probably did. To pick up some other, I think they all sniffed around, but I know Goldman was by far and large the biggest.
Yeah.
And they took almost all of it. My guess is that Goldman was sitting here going, pretty sweet deal. We can hold it for 7 years.
So like, I mean, humor me on this because I'm kind of caught between a rock and a hard place on this, right? So one, I really want the FDIC to insure these deposits. I really want them to.
Sure.
All of it, right? $15 million, I don't care.
That's what they've said they'll do for... Silicon Valley Bank and then Signature Bank of New York.
Yes.
In New York.
Yeah. So,
but the two of those, they will do all depositors deposits will be insured.
Yeah. So part of me really wants the FDIC to do that because I think that, you know, if there is no faith in the banking system, then that's just, I think, worse for the economy as a whole.
Well, and I agree with you. The problem is the banks have to give us reasons to have faith in them.
Exactly. So that's my other thing. That's what I was going to say too, is like, okay, you did like as a depositor, you did bank. I don't want to say a sketchy bank because they weren't a sketchy bank until 3 years ago.
Yeah, so, you banked in a place that served your interests, but you have other things you're looking at. This is my thing. When you put your money in a bank, you should be able to take your money out. That's the cornerstone of banking is every penny I put in, I get out. I can get out at a whim.
Yeah,
I can take it out.
That.
On demand. Literally, it's called on-demand deposits. if I'm an investor in a bank, I'm looking for the bank to take the money that people have deposited and don't plan on moving very quickly. So anything that isn't in checking, basically. And I expect them to loan money out, bring it back with interest, raising my stock price. There is a bit of a push and shove there. It's not there. They are not the same purpose. It's goals that are at odds at times.
To me, it kind of rubs me the wrong way because it's like, all right, I want you to bank. Like I'd much rather people as a whole put money in checking and savings accounts at banks because I think that does create
It's better for the economy than the Bank of Mattress.
Yes, 100% much better for the economy. But at the same time, you know, I also think that and I hate saying like play stupid games, win stupid prizes, but it's like, there's a little bit of that. Like when you put $15 million into one bank account at Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah. Like, you'd have to wonder if it was just in one account or if it was in a few accounts, but even then it doesn't matter. Cause if it's a company and this is the company account, a corporate account, you expect it to be large.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I work for a company that's pretty big and I can't imagine that they have, you know, a bunch of $250,000 accounts.
It doesn't make sense to do that.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You know, the thing is, and I'll say this very, very quickly, because I think we skipped it earlier, specifically for Aaron and myself, none of this is financial advice. This is our opinions, our opinions only. If they happen to match up with the opinions of our employers, that is purely coincidental, but this doesn't reflect their opinions. It's not communication from either of them. That's why we don't talk about who they are.
Yes, exactly.
Often. But the...
or ever,
Eventually what happens is if you get big enough, and you don't often see this, but eventually you can actually just do business with the Fed.
Yeah.
And... as a financial institution, they would do business with the Fed directly.
Yeah.
So
they're
biggest
buying and selling bonds directly from the Federal Reserve, right?
They'll have accounts with Bank of America and with Chase Manhattan and with J.P. Morgan. They'll have accounts with all these guys just because it's easier. But the vast majority of the money, they'll do business straight with the Fed.
Oh, okay. So, that makes it.
They bank with the big bank, yeah. Not with an intermediary bank.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest bank in the world is the, believe it or not,
is always a central bank. It just happens to have been for the last 100 years our central bank.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about like how massive their balance sheet is, right? I mean, trillions of dollars. Speaking of which, it grew by $300 billion last week.
Yeah. Well, they opened some new credit facility. They opened one new credit facility, one new overnight facility, in an attempt to put security back in the markets.
It was just loan facilities.
These are hey banks, which one of you need emergency liquidity loans? We're here for that.
Yeah.
At the same time, they're playing the repo markets, which is their big one.
Yeah, I know. The repo markets, I think, are so manipulative right now. Like mm-hmm. the fact that trillions of dollars are moving every single week in that is just. The Fed's trying to keep
a soft cap on the money market guys who are also in repo markets. The Fed's just there to make sure that it doesn't go wild overnight.
Yeah, but like nobody needs the repo market aside from banks. Like if you really think about it, like, I don't know, like does Apple ever need to access the repo markets? I doubt it, right?
No.
Like, so it's really just like, you know, companies like Bank of America, like, I don't want to default, so let me sell as many bonds as I can in the repo market and then take the
cash. Hey, I need to
take the cash, pay off my debt. Yeah. And then something's
gone weird. I need more liquidity in my market. Give me cash. I'll give you these bonds. I'll buy them back. And the banks aren't helping. Some of the ways that banks will do that on the repo market, you look at and it's like, boy, that seems like it should not be legal, but it is. So,
I don't get me wrong, dude. I think there are a lot of things that are legal that should not be legal.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever. Right. So, I'm speaking like in the context of financial securities and the different kinds that exist, but I don't know, essentially, in a nutshell, what happened.
Yeah, but the FDIC stepped in. I mean, and now here's what really annoys me, and my answer is no, absolutely not. But the mid-sized banks of the United States, or the MBCA, or whatever they're called, they came out. Yeah, the mid-sized banks of the U.S. came out this last few days, and they've asked the FDIC to extend that all deposits are insured to their full value for 2 years and to all mid-sized banks. And my response to that is not only no, but fuck no. Unless, banks, you're going to start paying much better premiums to reflect this new, substantially larger insurance policy.
Because with this new insurance policy, like, you could take much more riskier risks.
At that point, you can absolutely lose the plot.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, the only people I'm hurting are my investors. I'm not hurting my depositors. Depositors, don't panic. Leave your money with me. It's safe. You can't lose a dime for 2 years.
No, this is the thing, I do not want the government to
backstop that.
In a way, banks
need to be responsible.
Exactly. I don't want them to subsidize in a way irresponsible behavior. I don't want them to subsidize
absolutely
stupid. Well,
yeah, it's moral hazard. It's that same moral hazard of like, why would banks, you've spent decades. In fact, you've spent your entire existence basically privatizing all profits. And now you're trying to socialize the loss to the taxpayer. Yeah. My response to that is absolutely not. No. If you make bad decisions, you should fail. If you're making blatantly bad decisions, your depositors should leave.
Yeah. But I do, so like, I also want to look at the other side of the coin too, right? So the other side is, I don't want the banking system to be unreliable. There needs to be some sort of fine line. I don't mind the $250,000 limit. Like, that to me is normal.
For me, maybe it's a little low.
Okay, yeah.
Now.
In this high inflationary environment, yes.
Yeah.
But
as a whole, yeah. There needs to be a limit. This is the one we have. And, you know, I think it's unrealistic for these banks. And if the FDIC and the Treasury and the Fed get together and they agree, yeah, sure, we'll insure all deposits at mid-sized banks for a period of 2 years. My response to that is, you've just disincentivized any kind of responsible long-term thought from these guys. You've told them you can be as reckless as you want in the short term. And then what happens, and here's the real problem, what happens in 22 months when there's only 2 months left on this, they've made some really shit decisions, or they've just gotten really used to being in a place where they don't have to worry about it. And they go, can't we extend it?
Yeah.
I think I haven't said it in a very long time, because last time I said it was in October, I want to say, of 2021. But this is just another example of a group of people with means asking for socialism for the rich
and ruthless capitalism for the poor.
Except that this time they're saying, maybe we don't kick the poor people. We just don't help them. right? Like, they won't lose anything.
Yeah.
But boy, are we going to gamble with their money.
Yeah.
Like, it's that to me. It's just this.
The casino's open for us.
Our casino's open. And here's the best part. They can't lose. So we'll be fine.
We can do whatever we want. No. Yeah. So I think it's ridiculous. But the tough thing for me too is like I want regional banks to do well. I want there to
Absolutely.
Be more. I want there to be a stronger emergence of regional banks and different regions. Because like it seems like every time there's a regional bank that comes up and starts to do pretty well, it seems like they end up being owned 58% by JP Morgan.
Yeah, they get bought out.
Right. So it's like yeah, or like a lot of their deposits, a lot of their mortgages get bought out. Like it seems like they're in business to create securities for bigger banks. Is it, you know,
absolutely,
yeah. So that's kind of brings me to this point.
Like it's this very awkward idea that when you get banks that are so big that they can do all this, I think they should be required to they should have to break up certain aspects of their business. I'm not entirely convinced that commercial banks should have strong investment arms for themselves.
No.
You're investing. You have a portfolio management department, but that's for your clients who are investing. Well, that's fine. But when they're like, oh yeah, well, in order to keep our liquidity right, we have to start playing these repo markets. We have to start doing this and this. And it's like, well, how much of this activity that you're doing to keep yourself liquid, if it works, makes profits for the bank. And if it doesn't work, right, if it doesn't work out as well as you hope, it keeps you liquid. But if it works out better than you hope, you make a profit. And so it's one of the things where I'm like, you shouldn't, I don't necessarily know if that should be allowed.
Yeah, I know. So that's the thing is, I feel like the repo markets, like, and I don't mind the repo markets. I have nothing against the fact that it exists.
That's not what I'm...
I know. But I just feel like, you know, if you think about it, it's like, okay, why do you need to go to the repo markets so often?
Why do you need to go to the repo markets every night?
Yeah, because if that's happening, if you're a bank and you're going to the repo market saying like, hey, I have a computer, I have a car, and, you know, whatever, can you buy these from me real quick and I'll buy them back from you in 2 weeks, right? Like, it's like that to me is like, you know, and you have to do that because you're trying to not default on a loan or something like that. And the fact that you have to do that just means you're completely mismanaging cash on some other end of your
overcommitting.
Exactly. Like I don't understand how you mismanage your cash that poorly, where you need to go access $2 trillion in the repo markets every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as a whole, right? I mean, I don't think there's a single bank that does that.
To me, it kind of sounds as silly as this. When Enron, before they failed, they were like, "Hey, we're gonna sell our bandwidth at night." I'm like, to who and how? That's not how it works. And they're like, yeah, but we're gonna.
Exactly.
I'm like, that's fucking stupid. Which probably should, I'll be honest, that probably should have been a big indicator, folks, that Enron was a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. That drink has already been digested. Anyways, I think we need to talk about Credit Suisse now, too.
Yeah, let's see what Credit Suisse's appetite is.
Yeah, the
appetite,
one more drink
the appetite, to Credit Suisse. Is debit.
Yeah, it's debit Suisse.
Yeah, so. as of last week, they are now debit Suisse to me. And as of actually today, they're UBS. For $3.2 billion. That's it. For $3.2 billion, they've been given the ability to borrow 50 billion francs, and they were purchased for $3.2 billion, which is about 3.1 billion francs, right?
And so, okay, I mean, let's tell the Credit Suisse story, right? So Credit Suisse, they've been around for forever too. It's a long-standing bank that for a long time, a great bank, a fantastic bank.
So they are a Swiss bank, obviously, given by the name.
Yeah,
they have existed for a very long time, and they've been a very profitable bank historically. They've had a really bad run the last 2 to 3 years.
Well, I mean, if you really want to, you could say the last 15 years. But scandals, fraud.
Scandals,
I mean,
fraud,
money
bad
laundering.
Investments, money laundering. They can't get it right. Why they choose not to is beyond me.
So, I mean, there's scandals between the CEO acting out just crazily. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been convicted of fraud. They've been convicted of money laundering. They've had divisions within Credit Suisse that the entire division
it's just a criminal enterprise.
Just has to go, and then the rest of the bank has to plead negligence, right? Like, oh, wait, I didn't know,
well, like,
right?
Like, I mean, so that's Credit Suisse. That's Credit Suisse in a nutshell. What could go wrong did go wrong, I guess.
They made a bunch of bad investments. Like, they invested in startups
and on top
that
of
just
that,
failed,
and on top of that, they weren't
over,
making money. It was kind of like Nebraska football with Scott Frost. It was a bunch of bad decisions, and in the end, they didn't win games.
Oh man.
Like, well, it's, and that's the difference between that and Ohio State hiring Urban Meyer. Like, it's a bunch of bad decisions, but they won.
Yeah, for sure.
So you can overlook some things when
Ryan
you're winning.
Day, right? They're winning with Ryan Day right now, but whatever.
Credit Suisse, actually, it gets worse because it gets worse. Of course it gets worse. It always gets worse. I was talking about this in the Discord because I looked it up and I asked myself the initial first question of, does Switzerland have an FDIC? By a different name. What is the What is the depositor insurance in Switzerland? And it's called Ezy Swiss. And I read about it, and the more I read,
I thought it was Easy Swiss, but whatever. Yeah.
The more no I read, the more I was surprised there hadn't been a run on Debit Suisse. So for me, it all started with Debit Suisse comes out and they say, "Hey, we will not be issuing our quarterly statements tomorrow as scheduled because last night we received a late night phone call from the SEC telling us we needed to revise our statements." And that's when you go, a minute, the SEC doesn't do much.
Yeah, so they don't. Yeah,
they miss a lot of obvious things.
So. Yeah, it's just a normal earnings release, right? I mean, like, think about, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing a bunch of companies are coming out with their earnings report, the Q1 earnings report this week, right? So, you know, it's a normal earnings release. I mean, there's nothing really to hide, right? You release it and then the investors kind of react.
Absolutely.
Debit Suisse, in this sense, they're like, "Oh, hold on, we can't do it yet because the SEC says we need to hold on.
You need to change it." And so Aaron and I are texting, and I go, "I really want to know what this is because it's got to be a material misstatement." I think that's the phrase I use. It's a material misstatement.
Yeah, exactly.
And we find out later, it was material issues. They didn't say misstatements. They said there were material issues with the statement. And I was like, well, that's pretty close. A material misstatement, I guess, is a little bit worse.
Yeah. So what happened with Credit Suisse recently? Same kind of deal. A bunch of depositors were just like, "We're done with this bank." Mm-hmm. Between the fraud, the lack of transparency, the fact that they potentially are selling my information
and piss poor management. Plus, here's the big
poor management,
right? So here's
bad cybersecurity, all that stuff.
Here's how Swiss banking deposit insurance works. Every bank will receive, if it fails, a maximum of 6 billion francs.
Oh,
Credit Suisse is a 150 billion franc company.
Exactly. So to just kind of give everybody the context of the Bank of Switzerland, Credit Suisse is still currently, I think, bigger than the entire Bank of Switzerland.
Yeah.
Right.
Even with its 80% decline in share price over the course of the last year, is not a small bank by any means. Especially so when you have approximately 150 billion francs dollars. I forget which one it is. In assets under management,
the maximum
deposit insurance you have is 6. You have a problem. And the next
and
one is
depositors know that. Everybody's aware of this problem. You read further and you realize,
at most, I can get back 200,000 francs. It's the most I can get back. I'm not guaranteed to get back 200,000. I can get back at most.
Oh, you're not to be guaranteed.
I'm not guaranteed. Wow. I'm not guaranteed dollar for dollar. I'm guaranteed a percentage of the 6 billion that reflects my percentage deposits as deposits of the bank.
Wow.
So if you end up with a bank with a huge number of depositors, it's possible that I might only get, and I had 200,000 francs in there. It's possible, a JP Morgan style bank, right? It's possible that my max payout is 12,000 francs. No matter how much money I have in there, I can only get 12,000 back because that's my percentage of deposits total in the bank.
Yeah.
There's another possibility, Silicon Valley Bank style, where I would be owed more than 200,000, but they go, 200,000 is the cap. There's your 200,000. Get out.
Yep.
And boy, let me tell you, if you didn't like the U.S. banking idea of up to $250,000, I imagine you'd hate even more than going, "Well, your payout is somewhere between 0 and 200,000. When will I know?
Easy Suisse.
After we get in there and the bank's gone. Oh, so boy, be really sensitive to liquidity issues at the bank.
Yeah. So I mean, honestly, like, and I've actually kind of been saying this, like, you know, low key, under my own breath, because I don't necessarily want this to happen, but I've always just been like, dude, Credit Suisse, like, why don't you just fail already? Like, honestly, like, you've made so many bad decisions. You've brought on worse people to
just
make
dissolve,
worse
just break
decisions.
Up, just break up and dissolve.
So just break up, dissolve, do a manager buy-in with an actual good bank, right? So UBS goes in. UBS is actually a good bank, I think.
UBS is. So the union of... Yeah.
United Bank of Switzerland is what it's based on. I think that's what it is, right? So UBS, which I think, you know, the Twitter page, Litquidity, I think it's a bunch of UBS associates.
If it was United Bank of Switzerland before, it's even more united now.
If you want to think about Switzerland, right? You've probably seen the listeners. You've probably seen Wolf of Wall Street. Where do they go to create these foxholes for Jordan Belfort? They went to Switzerland, right? That is actually that's a real thing. Credit Suisse was one of rat holes, whatever. Sorry, my bad. Okay. Close enough, right? Same thing, right? A fox is a bigger rat almost, but they went to Switzerland, you know, and it wouldn't surprise me if Credit Suisse was one of those banks that these con men like Jordan Belfort went to and they were like, hey, let's open up an account here.
Absolutely not. No, Switzerland has very specific banking laws, like a better term, lax banking laws.
That's why people love going there is because
enjoy banking in Switzerland. That is why there's a reason that when Bobby Axelrod flees at the end of his last season in Billions before the next season, welcome back, Bobby.
Yeah.
He goes to Switzerland because what he was doing in the US were not crimes there, or he would not be extradited for them, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that's Credit Suisse or Debit Suisse or now the newest, the newest acquisition of UBS.
Subsidiary of UBS.
Here's the really thing. We'll see if UBS can be the chemo that, Credit Suisse needs, or if the cancer of Credit Suisse is going to infect UBS. I'll be honest, it could go either way. It really could.
Well, that's why I said I feel like it's exactly like the song Heart Shaped Box by Nirvana when
Kurt Cobain is
like, I wish I could eat your cancer, right? Like, so
well, UBS and now we'll see.
I feel like
we'll see how that contagion goes.
Yeah, well said. See, I feel like UBS, what they need to do. I think they need to bring in a bunch of people, a bunch of consultants, and just say hey, this is our risk management division. This is how you're managing your investments from now on, right? I don't know. I don't know the solution for Credit Suisse. I have no idea.
No, the thing is, I don't think Credit Suisse clearly doesn't either because they haven't.
They've been trying to figure it out for the last 3 years. And I feel it makes sense, right? You see this a lot. Whenever a sports team is down by a lot against another team, when a football team is down, they start calling these super aggressive plays, and they sometimes come back and bite.
All or nothing. You know?
Yeah, they start doing these 20-yard pass plays, and all of a sudden interception,
pick six,
or whatever it is. Yeah, exactly. So, I feel like that's what Credit Suisse was doing for the last 3 years. Was just they were down bad. And they made these risky investments.
Well, it was like Dick Fuld at the end at Lehman when he's Warren's offering at 40. We were at 100 a month ago. It's it's been 6 months, and also that's not the world we're in right now. So stop.
And these are preferred shares. So what's your problem?
Come to reality.
This is the $5 billion in liquidity. This is the $5 billion in liquidity that you needed to stay solvent.
This is liquidity we need for solvency and a name that will come on board. And the second he comes in, markets will settle because Buffett doesn't like to lose money.
I think that's what's happened to you with Credit Suisse. UBS is going. I forget how much how big the deal was. I think it was just $1 billion. It was they're getting Credit Suisse for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, $3.2 billion.
Also shrinking
they're buying
in size
for $3.2 billion, and so they're for $3.2 billion. It is, but they, but $150 billion in assets for $3.2 billion. I'm relatively certain the equity stake is bigger than that, so they're not buying all liabilities too, which they're going to buy as well. But
yeah,
they got it for a song and a dance. I mean, granted, now it's like when West Germany and East Germany reunited. They got it for a song and a dance, but now they have to fix it. It's like what'll happen if South Korea and North Korea ever actually do unify. The cost to the South will be astronomical. Even though they've been saving money, it's going to be huge because they have to catch up with 70 years of mismanagement.
Yes, that's the thing with Credit Suisse too, is this has been a poorly run business for, let's call it 15 years, right? So 15 years, they've been losing money left and right. Now UBS buys into it. They don't want Credit Suisse to continue losing money because if they continue to lose money, it's losing money for them.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to go in, invest a bunch of money into this project to see how they can patch it up.
So we say $3.2 billion. That was to get the right to plow much more money in.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way to put that.
Exactly. You're buying, think about it this way. You're trading for a soccer player with a bad ACL. So you really hope he comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting the soccer player, you know that you're going to have to pay a ton of money for the best doctor to give him the best surgery to recover his knees. And then you're going to have to pay a really good physical therapist to get him rehabbed and everything. And then maybe even a psychologist to get his mental game correct, and then say, all right, now be the soccer player that you used to be, right? So That's
yeah,
essentially
don't be afraid to go out there again.
That's essentially like, don't be afraid to slide and attack, right? And that's essentially like what UBS is doing with Credit Suisse. It's like, all right, you're buying this, you know that you're gonna have to give Credit Suisse some surgery.
Oh yeah.
And they're gonna have to go through rehab, and they're gonna have to get sports psychology training
more
again,
than
you know?
I hate to say it, more than just that. I love that analogy, the surgery. It's almost like sending what's happening with Credit Suisse is it's almost like sending someone to rehab.
Yeah.
Because you know that you know very badly they're going to want to relapse. And I'm sorry that this is a very drug-based episode, but bad banking and drug dealing and being addicted to drugs, I'll be honest, they go hand in hand, folks.
It's weird how much overlap there is. But yeah, I mean, like that's essentially what's happening with Credit Suisse, you know? And like, I don't want Credit Suisse to go under, but I just feel like there needs to be consequences for the terrible decisions they made.
I'm indifferent.
Like, you don't...
So for me, if Credit Suisse were to fail
too,
or be sold off for parts, like be allowed to fail as an entity and just be sold off, I'm fine with that. It's what's going to happen with SVB. SVB apparently is being sold now for parts.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's like if a bank makes really bad decisions and rides the motorcycle without a helmet, you know, it's still good for organs.
Sure,
but it should be allowed to happen. But then again, we have from Halloween a few years ago that a lot of companies that should fail or that should be failing haven't failed. Like they're kept alive and stagnant. But it's like, no, let them fail. Free up the capital for something new.
Yeah, I'm like, and that's the thing is like, you know, I appreciate the fact that you're like, you know, you're a true capitalist in the sense that like, there are consequences for bad business decisions.
There should be.
Yeah, I don't like, you know, I don't call it a bailout, but it's about as close as you can get to a bailout without it officially being a bail. It's not like the TARP program, which I have my issues with, but I also appreciated the fact that it exists, that it happened.
Yeah,
but you know, it's really very much a double-edged sword, right?
Absolutely.
And people are coming in and they're bailing out. They're bailing out Credit Suisse, Debit Suisse, whatever you want to call it, and SVB and Signature Bank of New York, right? But with that said, I want to talk about CPI real quick.
Yeah, we got CPI coming up.
Yeah, because like
it's the big week.
Underneath all this is a huge week, right? So underneath all these bank failures, right? Which I like, you know, I say all these things that I said to basically say like I don't think it's going to be that. It's really going to be that bad. But of course, the universe and its infinite wisdom, as I was telling people, like I don't think it's going to be that bad.
But it could be worse.
Yeah. Well, the universe in its infinite wisdom decided to pop an article in front of me that was an interview with Ray Dalio, and Ray Dalio was like, this is gonna be the worst thing ever. So, well, there are two sides to every coin. So I agree. I think Ray should calm down. But then again, Ray is a lot smarter than me. Mr. Dalio, I should say, is much smarter than me and knows a lot more than I do, has better access to information. So I don't want to say that this is not going to be anything, but I don't think it is. Obviously, Ray Dalio disagrees with me, and that's okay. I just wanted to bring that up just so you don't just like hear that I say it's okay, and you're like, okay, Aaron says so it's great.
I think we have the Fed meeting coming up Wednesday. They'll announce, I have to imagine it'll be a 25 basis point raise on the back.
I think it should be
50. I think we've agreed to that, is that it should be 50. 50 would really, because we have seen inflation starting to cool. If we do 50, I think then we can plateau maybe a quarter or two,
but we'll get to a
positive real interest rate.
Yeah, but it's still year over year, like
just in time for the U.S. to default on its debt. unfortunately, is where I'm at on that one. But
CPI is down, right? It's down on a year over year basis, but it's still up month over month. So
yeah, still like, it's still trending up. It's just trending up at a slower rate than ever before, I guess is the way to put that. We haven't seen.
Yeah, exactly.
It hasn't. Well,
it's up 0.4%, which, like, if you think about it, is not much. I mean, that's if it's up 0.4%, that's actually like pretty sustainable. But
that would not be the worst.
But year over year, it's up 6%, right?
So which is still about three times what they were saying. What the Fed says it wants to get is the average rate, and I'm like, well. I'll be honest, Fed, we're going to have to let's split the difference and call it 4, because I think 4% is about what we're going to have to live with as a society for the next few decades, just because 2%, you know, it was good while it lasted.
It was a lot of fun.
And the problem is the banks because they had 20, 30 years of 2%, never learned how to deal with actual problems. And it's because the Fed was holding everything in the way to make 2% work, but it's like something has to give. You can't, it's not sustainable.
No.
You can't do it.
I think the story is the same. Like I'm in total agreement with you. I think they should do 50. You know, the bond markets,
bond markets are going to be unhappy, but let's be fair. The interest rates right now, they are not what I would consider to be the biggest threat, the biggest cause for concern to bond markets. They're not.
No,
the U.S. federal government is. The U.S. legislature is. The House of Representatives is the Senate.
Later in the week, the bond markets actually reacted really well because the news of a 25 basis point rate hike versus a 50 basis point rate hike just startled, just made everybody in the bond market have a boner. I mean, it was just, the yields just went like that.
Yeah, yields came down. The capital value of the bond went up.
I get it.
Right? Let's put it this way. A bond that expires in, well, actually no bonds that are currently in expiration between now and June or July, do I find all that appealing? Because I'm not, they're getting paid, but it's like, I'm not certain. A bond that expires in August or September.
A 3 month zero coupon right now.
A 3 month zero coupon?
So you buy it now in March, April, May, June.
No. I probably
wouldn't buy a zero coupon federal government bond that, I mean, now through your 3 month coupons. Why do I keep saying 3 year? 3 month coupon.
I'm thinking of
like whiskey ages. Well, I know, but I'm thinking of like whiskey ages, maybe. That's probably why I'm saying 3 years, but like 3 month coupons. I mean, 3 month coupons have like a 4% yield now. So you wouldn't touch that?
Okay. With 4% yield, I might. Depends on the price.
Because you understand, if it defaults, it's not like you don't get anything for face value, right? Like if it defaults, right, you pay, I don't know what the discount rate of 4% is in 3 months, right? But like let's say you pay $950 for it. If it defaults, right, instead of getting $1,000, you might actually just get with a $1,000 par. So like if it defaults, you might just get like $985 instead of $1,000.
Yeah, which I wouldn't necessarily be against it. It's just
that's still considered a default, right? If
they don't pay you the full amount, it's a default.
It's a default. Yeah,
they have failed to make good on the obligation.
Exactly.
No,
so you wouldn't do it.
Probably not. And the only reason I'd say that is because they'd be paying me US dollars, which if the US defaults,
you're making.
Thank you.
That's a really, really good point.
Thank you for selling me my Bitcoin for Ethereum. It's one of those things where it's like, great.
You just converted me from one to another.
It's also in chaos. Like,
that's an excellent point. I think the biggest tailwind. The biggest headwind against the petrodollar is to your point, is the probability of a default, which I don't think is very high.
I think we're gonna avoid it,
but I think we're gonna create other issues by.
I think we could avoid it. The problem is, if they really wanted to avoid it, they'd have done something in February or January. March. You guys,
listen. I appreciate your idea of just. Let's just suspend the debt ceiling outright.
Just get rid of it, guys. Not that hard.
I appreciate the idea, but to me, I'm just like, I don't know if that's going to create more problems long term. So right?
My view is kind of the fewer things we have to leave in the hands of politicians, the better.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be leaving more things in their hands? I don't know.
They won't write a budget. If they won't write a budget, why am I trusting them with whether or not they're going to pay the credit card? Look, just pay the fucking credit card. You got the money. We know you do. You shook me 100%. Down for it with the IRS. I got the letters. to me, you guys can't spend money and then later come out and be like, oh, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling. Why not? Well, we don't want to spend this money. You already spent it. It's gone. You spent it.
Yeah, it's already
paid for it. Pay for what you've already spent.
No,
well, we don't want to spend more money. Now, we'll write a budget. Budget forward, debt ceiling backward. And I don't feel like I should have to go explain that to them, but I know I do. But what I will say is this, because whatever currency you want to buy it in, I'm going to tell you this. What will never lose value, there's only a few things in this world. And one of those things is the sweet merchandise you can find at drunkenomics.myspreadshop.com, where we have hoodies and sleeveless and sleeveys, golf shirts. Finally have the glasses now, the travel coffee mugs, all of it. That's stuff that you can, I'm not sure when, but maybe I'll find our artist again and I'll be like, and I'll have a new one that made that just says Drunkonomics, this economy's making me drink.
100%.
Yeah, no, it's no. Check us out there.
Seriously, we got some great black hoodies, some even darker black hoodies, some dark black polos, some dark black tank tops. So, you know, it's March, right? We're heading into spring.
Mm-hmm. Suns out, guns
out. It's going to be suns out pretty soon. Yeah, we're going to be in suns out, guns out season. But seriously, I think, you know, keep an eye on inflation. That's all I'll say as we wrap up. Yeah, keep an eye on inflation. It kind of got hidden behind all these bank stories, but also the Fed rate decision comes out later this week. It's going to be a pretty wild week. But hedge yourselves. One way to do that, not financial advice, is by getting yourself one of these really awesome hoodies. And then from there, you can always help us.
You can help us help you.
Do the tip of the tip jar.
Checking us out at patreon.com/drunkenomics, DRUNKENOMICS.
You're so close. Yeah, but seriously, anything there is much appreciated. You can help us keep the lights on, keep the liquor cabinet stocked, keep the fruit peeled and fresh, you know. I don't know, what's an Irish cocktail? Whatever. For that, yeah.
I don't know, just keep yourself happy with a... I don't have one, an Irish trash can.
I love it. But with that, seriously, thank you so much for listening along. I enjoy these very much. I hope you do too.
So we hope you enjoyed our
love any feedback.
St. Patrick's Day spectacular. Yeah, to run, so all I'm going to say is Slánchevá.
Slánchevá.
And I will see you all. Well, we will see you all at the week coming and next week.
Exactly. Until then, please remember to
stay drunkenomical, my friends.
Cheers.